Hello, testing. Okay, we are recording. Hello, and welcome to Back Pocket Entertainment, your source for movies, comics, and all around awesome. I'm Matt Martinez, and I'm here with my special guest, good friend, fellow filmmaker, Tim Fennell.
Good evening, everybody.
Remember to project.
Good evening, everybody.
Okay, so we just came from an evening showing of Pacific Rim in IMAX 3D. And let's start off with some positives. Fun, lots of fun, but flawed.
Well, we should definitely point out that obviously there are spoilers ahead. Otherwise, you would not be listening to this.
Huge spoilers.
And as you stated, we saw this in IMAX 3D, and there has never been a film where I felt IMAX 3D was the only way that I could enjoy it, maybe up until I saw Pacific Rim. I've fought the 3D conversion for as long as I could, because I believe a movie should stand on its own merit. But here we are. And I don't think I would have been able to enjoy that movie if I didn't jump because I thought bits and pieces of CGI'd boat were flying at my face.
It was very immersive, indeed. I mean, there are certain points where they rip off bodily parts of the gaijus, and it is you feel like you're going to be hit in the face with them. It's definitely fantastic in that regard. As a pure spectacle, not much more fun could have been had. Unfortunately, we are too... filmmakers, editors, shooters, and writers, and I mean, we didn't go in expecting much,
right? So
I mean, so in that regard, I mean, we wanted super action fight, and we got that. We just could have had more, were it not for.
It's definitely one of those movies where, since we're sticking to the good points right now, it's one of those movies where after the fact, I'm left wanting more. And normally that's a sign of one or two things. Either A, the film was fantastic and obviously you want to see more of it because you're hoping that you get more of what you enjoyed. Or you want to see more because you were left not getting everything that you wanted. And I feel like watching this movie was very much like going to a five-star buffet where you get your plate and it's a piece of lettuce with a really small little parsley snip on it instead of the steak that you were hoping to get. I got lettuce, and I'm not a vegetarian.
But every once and again, like someone from the other side of the room will throw a piece of meat in your mouth.
Right. you get the smell of meat, and by smelling the meat, you assume there's going to be more meat, but then there never is.
Yeah, best thing to do is to start at the beginning. They kind of thrust you into this world, and. The world is set up very, very well. I mean, you got your standard narration, your montage, and then you think, okay, they're just going to thrust us in, and it's going to be a ride.
I should point out here that I feel one of the cardinal sins for me when it comes to making a film is if you're going to give me exposition in the form of a montage at the very beginning of a movie, that should be it.
Give us everything.
I don't want anything more after that point in time. You should have packed everything, if that's the way you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Pack it all in so that... a la Lord of the Rings and Hobbit and all of those other films, the only other exposition I need is stuff that has to be revealed as a reveal, not things that are absolutely necessary in order for me to enjoy what I'm supposed to be watching.
Exactly. And that's the thing. And again, we're not harping on the writing as though we were expecting a Shakespearean masterpiece. Not at all. We expected, you know, a cheesy B-movie elevated to deluxe CG grandeur, which is what they gave us. What we were expecting was, you know, just the basics of narrative 101, which is, you know, you don't give us an important plot point 2 seconds before it's relevant in the story. That is just not good entertaining pacing. You need to give it to us early enough for us to let it sink in, and it was that, unfortunately, was not done. A big narrative faux pas in my book, and the characters that delivered those pieces of information kind of took all the wind out of the movie, really, because every time we're getting into the main characters, and we're getting them developed. You know, cheesy dialogue and all, but we're getting the characters developed in a very cool cinematic way, and the battles are awesome. They'll cut very inexplicably to our two comedic relief exposition characters, and they bring the whole thing down. They're not funny half the time, and when they are, it works, but what should have happened, those scenes should have been cut in half, put in the beginning with all the exposition we needed, and then moved on, but they decided to parcel it out for some reason.
I think one of the biggest problems when it comes to this film, it really comes down to expectation. When you see a name like Guillermo del Toro attached to something, you think of the man who did Pan's Labyrinth. Devil's Backbone. Things that
Hellboy.
In the respective fields of the films that they were in, you know, sci-fi or this fantastical world, even just like an Oscar winner as Pan's Labyrinth.
I mean, hell, this guy made Mimic, for Christ's sake. Mimic.
These are all films that, from a director, that you expect to give you something worthwhile. But really what you're getting, if I had seen that this was a movie made by Jerry Bruckheimer and produced by Joel Silver, I probably would have gotten exactly what I expected. But because it was Guillermo del Toro, I expected a lot more than what I ended up with. And we were talking earlier on, and I said that one of the things I think might be an issue is I think del Toro might have a little bit of trouble translating properly out of his native tongue. When you look at films he's done, they're native to Spanish, they're excellent movies, and everything that you read or hear, if you can speak the language, is brilliant dialogue. It's a well-put-together film. And then when you see the films that he's done in English, primarily, the dialogue tends to be a little kitschy, and I don't think that's ever been more prevalent than it has with this particular film. It feels a lot like, as you pointed out, we should have been watching this movie in Japanese with
really
bad translations.
Absolutely. The entire thing should have been subtitled, and that way you can just enjoy the visuals for their own sake and get the story verbalized at your pace. And again, not just from a story standpoint, also because I don't know if it was just the theater we were in or the sound system of where we were in, but it felt like half the dialogue was said too fast and spoken too loudly to make out. So maybe half the narrative stuff we were having problems with were explained, we just couldn't hear it. I don't know.
All right, so maybe what we should do now is go, let's break down the characters, because this is where I feel like a lot of our complaints are coming from, aside from the pacing of information they did and did not give.
Gotcha.
We'll start with the main characters and work our way down. So we go to Charlie Hunnam's character, Rowley, the main character of it all. Throughout the initial exposition, we're given this entire world through his eyes, so it's obviously left to understand he's the main character.
And essentially, to give some context, this world is essentially, imagine if you will, Top Gun meets Godzilla by way of Rock'em Sock'em Robots. That's our universe in a nutshell.
I don't want to steal from another podcast, but I did listen to one other podcaster who reviewed this movie say that it was like watching Robot Jocks with Godzilla, and it was very
I
much
I loved
like
Robot
that.
Jocks.
Well, yeah, but that's the other thing, though, is that Robot Jocks was enjoyable. But anyway, so this main character, Rowley, in the very beginning, he loses his brother, and you're like, oh no, that's terrible. And they make a big deal throughout all of the exposition to point out that he lost his brother. That's why he wasn't fighting the good fight for 5 years. That's why he was able to pilot a Jaeger by himself, which they made a big point about. How there's only two people that ever piloted a Jaeger by themselves. The main character, Rowley, and then the Marshal,
Idris Elba's character,
played by Idris Elba, who, again, best lines in the entire film was this man's dialogue.
Best performance, yep.
So these two characters, we harp on the fact that both of them could pilot a Jaeger by themselves. They're the only two to do it. And yet, there isn't a single moment throughout this movie where we see either of those two characters pilot a Jaeger by themselves. So what exactly was the point of harping on that as much as we did? There's none. There's no point. Pentecost doesn't ever pilot a Jaeger by himself. Rowley never takes over a Jaeger and pilots it by himself. I was hoping at the end that he was going to eject Mako, the female Asian character that he works with, eject her from the thing, take over the Jaeger by himself, go and drop the nuke and sacrifice himself in glorious
Well,
fashion.
That's the thing. That's what he says he's going to do, but when he does eject her, it's at a point where piloting it is useless at that point.
He doesn't pilot it's anything. Like, he's just falling. He says, I don't need to do anything. I just need to fall. And that's what he did.
It's, oh my God. And it's like, they would do that a lot where they just set something up. They would do it in reverse. They would set stuff up with no payoff, or not set it up and just have it come out of nowhere. They would pull things out of their asses, which, again, it's not that they didn't make sense within the confines of the world, but it's cheap writing to bring it up 2 seconds before you need it out of plot convenience. And they did that a couple times. And again, the whole thing's an editing issue, really. You give me, you know, a week and a Steinbeck, or, you know, a Final Cut Pro, and I'll give you a better cut of this movie. But...
So that's my thoughts on the main character. And then I forget the actress's name, the one that plays Mako, but I mean, she could have had a lot of potential, and we really did get to explore her essentially fully. The only thing we didn't get to really explore was this, I assume they were trying to push the idea of a romance brewing between these two, but here we come to the second cardinal sin that was committed for me. I hate it when you tease a romance and don't show it, or you don't show enough of it, and then I also hate it when the romance is all that you focus on between two characters. And it seems like in order to avoid both of these things, they were like, we might be romantic, but we're not gonna tell. Like, come on, if these two characters are supposed to be romantic, then have them be romantic from start to finish. Have them, you know, start to have feelings for each other, share feelings before the big fight, not just after the big fight. Don't give me the same thing that I've seen since 1984 with every action that's ever existed, where two characters are not really agreeing, but they kind of have a thing for each other, and then they have their love kiss after something terrible has happened, and they manage to survive.
They spared us the kiss, at least. Like, they salvaged it, and again, it's a case of pulling a plot point too late, where I think right before they go into the last battle, he says, you know, I've started thinking about my future, and then he looks into her eyes and says, my timing's always been horrible, and I'm like, thank you for that one. You could have spared us... You could have spared us the cliche and just gone in. I mean, who cares if one of you has a dick and one of you has a vagina? It doesn't matter. Seriously, at this point, you're both hardened war vets going into this shit, okay? You don't need to bring this up right now. And at the end, really, what it amounted to, had it not been for that one line, that would have just been two war buddies who'd been through it giving themselves the biggest victory hug. But instead, it's reduced to... Oh, okay, they made googie eyes for 2 seconds, and now that's it.
And that's what's happening.
I mean, there, really.
One or two moments where they went googly-eyed over each other, and then, because, oh no, Charlie Hunnam's got six-pack abs, so I'm going to stare at him.
He never even takes his shirt off. I felt ripped off.
He did take his shirt off.
When?
There's a moment right after they had their bow staff fight, which I'm not even going to get into the fact where
she sees his scars. Yes,
right.
I'm sorry.
We apparently, the best way to decide whether or not you can mind meld with someone telepathically and control a giant fucking robot is by beating someone up with a bow staff. We're not going to get into that at all.
The Red Sonja logic. Yeah, you can only be inside me if you can beat me. I get it.
Fair enough. we're not going to touch base on that. I'm going to let that one lay. All right. God, I'm so... The line that Raleigh says when he's like, you know... I've always had bad timing.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like I would like to
believe... They had avoided it all the way up until that point.
I would like to believe, though, I would like to believe that line was ad-libbed by Charlie Hunnam, and it wasn't so much a statement of the love affair as much as it was a statement on the film as a whole. This film had very poor timing.
I agreed. Yep, agreed.
So I snickered at myself a little bit. I was like, boy, you said it, sir. You said it. Do we want to talk about... Let's talk about Idris Elba, because we've been bashing for a little while.
Oh, no,
let's talk about a good thing.
A revelation. He is everything you want him to be. He is kick-ass. He gives a moving performance at the same time. He's the one... I mean, he is your commander, your trainer, your father, your war buddy, all in one. He does so much... for what it really is an underwritten part. But he sells every moment. Like, it was a joy to watch him on screen. I could not love that actor enough.
You know, one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of actors make, especially when it comes to these big blockbuster films, it's because the film is so epic. Everything is such an extreme version of what it
would be. So much larger than life.
It's so much larger than life that the actors become larger than life, and it's almost like they're doing a stage show in a film. And they lose the nuances that really make a good performance what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And in this case, Idris Elba's character was nothing but the perfect nuances for who that person should have been. He was like a war leader. So exactly. He's never going to let his emotions get out of control. And you could see them bubbling, but you could also watch him controlling himself because he knew that everything that was going on was so much bigger than himself. It didn't matter how he felt about Mako being his adoptive daughter. He knew that nobody in the world would ever care. He knew that the only thing that mattered was trying to save the world.
Absolutely.
And he showed it, and that made his performance fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, I could not recommend his performance enough. Honestly, I could forgive it all. I could forgive the cheesy... And again, we didn't go in there expecting Shakespeare. We wanted the big fights. We wanted the kick-ass characters. And any other flaw could be forgiven if not for what was my biggest cardinal sin. And I don't even remember their names. I'm not even going to bother to learn them. But the two science guys, from the minute they're introduced, you can tell, okay, these are your stereotypical comic relief exposition guys. And that's fine. The only problem is, when you have people like that, you don't devote so much screen time to them that it undercuts your actual main characters. You don't do it. Seriously. And I'm sorry, Ron Perlman. I love you. But you shouldn't have been in this movie. Not your fault. I'm pretty sure you were just written in because Guillermo del Toro loves you so much. And that's fine. But seriously, you cut his, he plays a war profiteer who's there strictly to get these two science guys from point A to point B so they can get the exposition they need to pull their bogus plot points out of their asses for the final fight. Which, you cut his character out completely. Actually, no, recast one of the science exposition guys as him. Take them both out. Just make him both characters. Cut the screen time in half. Give all his dialogue in the first two scenes. You see the character? All of the pacing issues of the movie gone. And you can devote more time to the epic fights and the main character development.
There was no real reason for those two scientists to be there. Mm-mm. And they made the same mistake that a lot of people make when it comes to these scientists. They're trying to show off quirkiness, but instead they're just showing dumb foolery.
Exactly.
You have two actors who are known essentially for their bumbling characters that they play consistently. And you want us to believe that both of these characters have gotten to a point and place in their lives with their quote-unquote natural quirks, that they are PhD-licensed professionals that are the top scientists in the world on these alien monsters, but they're slipping over their own 2 feet. They can't spit out an entire sentence without stumbling on their words. They're sort of just going half-cocked into these harebrained ideas just in a, oh, I wonder what's going to work, and maybe it'll be funny sort of way. It's just not conducive to keeping your audience in the movie. But I think that maybe that was the point. Maybe the point was not to keep the audience in the movie and have something strewn throughout the entire film that pulls us out. Because I probably spent more time scratching my head, wondering what was going on with these characters than actually paying attention to the plot. Well, and I could have missed entire plot holes because I was too busy paying attention to these two idiots.
Well, okay.
And maybe that was the point.
Pondering it a little bit, I think I know what they were going for. They wanted... Of course, you need some manner of comic relief because... If they had cut them out entirely, what you have is basically, I'm sad, let's fight, I'm sad, let's fight. And yay! That's not a roller coaster. They didn't quite nail what Avengers nailed in being able to have all your characters so fully rounded that they can find the levity where it needs to happen for proper narrative pacing. Instead, they forced it in with two characters that ruined the better moments.
I'm not entirely,
if that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. I'm not entirely sure if I should be a little sad or just gleeful that The Avengers has become the summer blockbuster movie to compare all other summer blockbusters to.
Well, really, I mean, it's anything Whedon-esque, I should say. And again, I mean, I love Joss Whedon. I'm not going to go comparing him to everything. Not everything needs to be Joss Whedon, but I just bring it up for that balance. When you're doing something, you don't have to take all the joy out of something to make it, you know, dramatic. There's natural levity in places, but instead of finding the natural levity with the characters they had, they forced these characters in there, and it to the detriment of the whole piece.
So let's coin a phrase from the film, and let's go down this rabbit hole a little bit.
Okay.
One of the things from The Avengers that made it so fantastic is there's not a single character in that entire film that's the bumbling idiot. There isn't one.
Exactly.
All the comedy is situational, and it's very highbrow, and it's
very organic.
It's very organic. And that's the sort of comedy that you really want in these sort of blockbusters. Something that's going to make people laugh, but not in a slapstick, stupid sort of way.
With the characters, because they're feeling what they're feeling.
And we feel even more for these characters. The entire persona of Tony Stark that has been created off of Robert Downey Jr.'s performance, we care for him because of the comedy that he breeds. Mm. And it makes the times when he's serious so much more important.
And you know what? And that's a perfect parallel. Imagine Tony Stark and Jarvis. Okay? Imagine, and we're gonna go right back to Pacific Rim. Imagine if in Iron Man, they turn Jarvis into, every time he says something, it's a joke, or he's explaining something we need to know for the next 2 seconds of film as fast as he can with no thought to timing or dramatic pacing at all. That's what these two characters were in Pacific Rim. Every time I was getting emotionally invested, they would cut to them and they would ramble off on something so fast I barely got it, and it's something I needed to know for the next scene. It did not work.
Yeah, it really. One of the things that I had said to you earlier was that I like my films to be categorized sort of black and white. I've gotten to a point now where I don't really have the patience to go and spend money on a film that's in a gray space where I'm not sure if it's going to be good or not. And given all the technology that we have to, quote-unquote, borrow films online, if that's the way that you like to view them, we really don't have to, as a society, sit back and sort of play this guessing game anymore. So if there's going to be a film that's going to be great, I want to expect that it's going to be great, I want to see it and think that it's great, and then enjoy the fact that it was great. If there's a movie that's going to be bad, I want to know that it's going to be bad from the jump, so that I can go into it knowing it's going to suck, not pay attention, and then expect that I got what I paid for, which was a sucky movie. And in this case, we had a film that I, for better or for worse, maybe it just makes me naive, went in expecting that I was going to get something at least enjoyably good.
And again, it was not an I want to let the viewers know, this was not an unrealistic expectation. We were not expecting Shakespeare.
No, I told you I wanted to see robots fighting monsters.
That's all we wanted. Unfortunately, that was ruined by, they could not even pull off B-movie exposition comedic relief characters. It brought the movie. Really, I felt like we were watching two movies. A movie about an epic war between robots and monsters, and then a movie where two bumbling idiots fuck shit up.
I'm going to reference two films, one that's a little older and one that's a little newer. And the movie Shoot 'Em Up with Clive Owen, and then the newest Judge Dredd with Carl Urban. Both of these films were films that I enjoyed, because I went into them knowing that I wasn't going to get anything other than what they were pretending to be. It was going to be schlocky, popcorn feature, just action. And that's all that I wanted from both of these films. And in both of these films, you get all of the real exposition you need up front, and then it does not stop for another hour and a half. It's just guns and fighting and action.
And what makes those films great is that you get that, but executed to, for lack of a better description, to an award-worthy level. You have people who know how to cut and shoot, and they execute the material to a level where it's just enjoyable beyond what you would normally expect. And that's what makes those movies great. Here, however,
The thing about it is, and the reason why I brought these two parallels in, is if this movie had given us the exposition that it gave, and then the first thing we see when the movie actually starts is Charlie Hunnam getting put back into service, and then we were treated to nothing, literally nothing, but an hour and a half of robots fighting monsters, I would have gotten everything that I wanted from the start, and all I would be able to say here is that the movie had no plot. And that would be my only gripe with it, but that it had no plot.
But even then... Even then, the film would have still elevated past what it meant to be, because the chief conceit of this film is that there have to be two pilots for each of these robots, because since you're controlling it with your mind, the human mind is not strong enough to control one of these robots on their own, so you need two. In order to do that, they have to form a psychic link with each other. They have to be completely at one with each other's memories, thoughts, and feelings. So all your character development could have been dealt with in these flashback memories, which they do to a point. But again, improper editing and characters that bring down the narrative keep pulling us out of those moments and keep this movie from being elevated to what it should be. This movie should have been the Raiders of the Lost Ark was to 40s adventure serials. What Kill Bill was to 50s to 60s and 70s westerns and kung fu movies, but it falls just so short because of those editing and narrative problems.
It's a little ironic that the biggest thing that the most fantastical part of this entire movie was the idea of two pilots having to use their connections, there are different lobes and melding in a perfect unity, and yet that's the thing that this movie failed at, was taking the action and the exposition and forming it into a perfect unity.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, I got to see robots fighting giant monsters, and I got to see it in 3D, and it made me go wow at a couple of... There were definitely a couple of points in this movie during the action where, you know, my mouth went a little agape.
A little, like, oh yeah, oh, more than a little for me. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. So
luckily, I was self-editing the whole time, so I thoroughly loved the movie with, you know, epic monsters and rousing speeches, and I was able to delete from my memory, you know, except, you know, to review it, obviously, you know, the horrible movie about two bungling idiots who just pulled random science out of their ass when it was convenient.
This is a movie where I can only ever imagine watching this in one of two ways. Watching it in the IMAX in 3D so that I got such an experience that it was overwhelming and really made the enjoyable parts of this movie more enjoyable. Or watching it, just putting it on as background noise while I'm folding my laundry so that I can be enjoying the action when it's there. And then when everything else is going on, I can go back to folding my underwear and trying to find my lost right sock. That's the only two ways I can really enjoy this film. This movie, you know what this movie is going to be for our generation? I say our generation like you and I aren't already 30. What this movie is going to be
for... I'm 29, sir.
Fair enough. What this movie is going to be for the 2000s, we'll say.
Okay.
Starship Troopers. This movie is our new Starship Troopers. Interesting action with a good idea behind it. Horrible exposition and terrible characters putting it all together, with science that just kind of gets pulled out of the ass and facts that are thrown at us right before we need it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree with your assessment, sir. However, as I was watching it, I could feel that maybe... I'm hoping there'll be like a 2.5-3 hour director's cut on DVD. That'll smooth out the pacing problems. Because honestly, this movie was either too long or too short, and I don't know which. I really don't, because either you could have made a very lean, concise, well-paced version of this by cutting out a good 20 minutes, or you give the movie another hour and just make it a miniseries that really just allows each and every plot point to fully develop. It could work either way. And I would like to see both those versions. I don't think it'll happen, but...
Yeah, at the end of the day, if there's a director's cut that's elongated, it's only going to be worth it if the added stuff is more of what we actually want, what was actually good in this film, and less of Charlie Day running around acting like he's
in, like he wants to fuck the monsters. Uh-huh.
You know?
I mean, and I hate that we're sounding so overly critical, because, I mean, there was so much to like. Like I said previously, I basically loved the movie that it was and hated the movie it was trying to make me watch, if that makes any sense. Because honestly, if you had, and it all comes down to those two characters, I keep harping on it, if you had cut them out or just made their part more concise, the whole, all my issues, I mean, again, no movie's perfect, it would still have its flaws, but they would be totally forgiven, because the movie could have been what it should have been.
It's one of those films where when you read everybody else's, the critics' rundowns of what they have issue with, you kind of hope that maybe what's happening is you've got these film critics that are expecting everything to be AFI list Oscar worthy, mm-hmm. and what they're getting is films made for a completely different audience.
Yeah, and that's not what we were expecting at all.
But the problem is we went in with the mindset of the audience that this movie should have been made for, and we still had a lot of issues with it.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're anything like us, definitely, I mean, if nothing else, this movie deserves your money so that Hollywood gives us more of this and tries to perfect it along the way, as opposed to just more remakes and reboots. I mean, because again, I mean, I'm not saying this movie's wholly original. Nothing is. Everything's the same basic 12 plots. We know this. But I mean, nothing that combines what this movie combines has been tried before. And if this were like a first effort of a first-time filmmaker, I'd be like, oh my God, I can't wait to see the second one. The second one will be amazing. But this is not, I mean, if anything else, this movie needs to be a success so that Warner Brothers will fast-track Guillermo del Toro's DC Dark Universe movie. Because I really want to see Constantine and Swamp Thing and Zatanna fight some evil magic shit.
Yeah, I feel like with every review of this film, Hellboy 3 is just getting farther and farther away, and that makes me a little sad. Oh, there's one last gripe that I have before we put this to rest. Before we just let it die, leave the steaming kaiju carcass where it is and walk away. There's a scene
at the camera work.
There's a scene at the very end. We're not going to talk about the camera work because that would be another 4 hours of us griping. There's a scene at the end, and you're going to recognize the scene if you've seen Independence Day, because it's the giant bomb floating in front of the alien's face. And I don't know what it is about humanity, or maybe just Hollywood as a whole, but they have it in their heads that every alien has big, dumb cow eyes. That when they see a giant bomb sitting in front of them, they can't have any other reaction other than, who?
I mean, and again, this is an advanced alien race. The type of alien race that can genetically engineer huge monsters with nuclear powers. So, you would think, okay, otherworldly design, sure, but that's probably something that's going to fuck my shit up.
This is also an alien race, mind you, that, according to Charlie Day's completely flabbergasted exposition, was been sitting around since the prehistoric era, because, yes, the dinosaurs are kaiju too now, basically waiting for our world to be ready for them to take it over. So if they've been sitting around for centuries, waiting, you'd think they'd be paying a little attention.
There's some very heavy-handed, not even subtext, text, that basically said, like, the saving the planet is happening on two fronts, because they couldn't, the dinosaurs could not acclimate to our environment, so they left. But we basically terraformed the planet for them by polluting it.
Which is, by the way, number one, it was completely ham-fisted when it was delivered the way it
totally
was. And number two, if he was trying to make this movie about, hey, this is what's going to happen if we're not taking care of our Earth, he screwed it up. Because that line went by way too fast. No one even picked it up or cared. It's a lot like how you'd have environmentalists trying to use the really old Godzilla films as an example of what would happen if we don't stop irradiating our Earth. Well, I hate to tell you, but nobody picked it up there either. The only thing people got from those movies was, A, oh my God, a giant lizard destroying things. We should have them fight other giant forms of creatures, because that would be awesome. B, dudes in suits look super fake.
Yeah.
And C, apparently, all anybody can do when they see a giant lizard appear is stop, stare, and point. Nobody just hops in a car or runs. Everyone stops and points, because everybody has to have a chance to actually take a look at what's trying to eat them. Nobody just goes, I don't even fucking care, let me go away.
What is it Doctor Who said in that one episode? The world ends as it was always going to, not with a bang, but with Twitter. Everybody needs to update their social status. Oh my god, world ending.
Yep. World's gonna end, LOL. What should I bring? Spark me. Come on. That's our generation.
You think we're too jaded?
I think this film jaded us a little bit. Maybe in a couple of days, maybe in a couple of months, maybe in a year or sometime when it comes out in DVD or Blu-ray, we'll change our minds about it. But right now, we're still very much in the shit.
Yeah.
I couldn't even begin to list the things that they brought up that you thought might be important that just never were mentioned again. The fact that Ron Perlman's character apparently had already drifted with the kaiju. Or, I don't know if you picked this up or not, at the very beginning, Charlie Hunnam during exposition time montage was explaining how kaiju blood is called kaiju blue, and it almost looked like that was going to be important, but it was never mentioned ever again.
It must have been one of those things that was too like mumbled for me to get.
He was talking about it, and it was like, we learned how to kill them. We found out that their blood was highly irradiated, called kaiju blue. It's like, well, what does it do?
But apparently it's not irradiated enough for Ron Perlman not to be able to dig his way out of one after he's eaten by it.
Yeah. Which, that whole scene at the very end, I'm pretty sure that was just Guillermo del Toro going, in case you didn't realize, I've already slapped you in the face with my penis, I'm going to do it again, so you understand what had just happened to you for 2.5 hours.
I hate how Haiti this is sounding. I mean, I had a lot more fun than this review makes it sound like I had. I really did. Goodness.
I would have had a lot more fun if I was drunk. In truth, again, we wanted to see monsters fighting robots. I saw monsters fighting robots, and for that, I'm thankful.
Honestly, it feels like so many loose plot threads. They're really sequel baiting, and this looks like it's going to make enough money. It'll probably get one. Honestly, this needed to be a 12-part miniseries on HBO. Would have solved all the issues. Really would have been.
It needed to come with a fast forward button. That's what it needed, so I could fast-forward through Charlie Day.
Again, too short or too long, not sure, but yeah. One of them. Oh, God. Charlie Day, why? Why did you ruin this movie for me? I mean, the other science guy, like, if it had just been one science guy, and it was that bumbling British guy, I like him. He was in Torchwood. He was in Dark Knight Rises.
He's still bumbling in this movie, though, and that's.
Mind that he was bumbling. He could have, like, I mean, the fact that he was bumbling was not the issue. The fact that he was bumbling, written poorly, and edited into the movie in such a way as to detract from the actual good things, that's what bothered me. Again, he needed to be there half the time at the beginning, and then never again. And then it would have solved so much. But no, these running plot threads that go nowhere, that detract from what we're there to see, why we're there to see it. And I really did have a good time. I mean, I really did. Anyway. I think that'll wrap things up for this edition.
I think that's all I got on
of Back Pocket Entertainment. Pacific Rim Edition. I'm Matt Martinez.
And I'm Tim Fennell.
I think we ran out of chips.